Welcome to the ProWrestling.net Progress Wrestling Review. My name is Hayden Gleaves, and I will be your guide as I talk you through day one of the Super Strong Style 16 of Progress Wrestling. This was held at the Electric Ballroom in Camden, London, on the 28th of May 2017. Yes, I know I'm a month behind. In my defense, they didn't release this till a week and a half after the actual event, and unfortunately, I've been a little bit busy. So I'm going to knock out the next 3 days as quickly as I possibly can. I've watched the first day. I've watched a little bit of the second day. So hopefully over the next week now, I should get day two and day three done before they release the next chapter, which is already in the can as I record this. But we'll talk about that some other time. But yeah, so I can only apologize for the delay in getting this audio review to you. In the future, these will be out a lot quicker. As soon as the chapters are on the on-demand service, I will be watching and I will be reviewing. Plus, I think it's 2 weeks Sunday coming up as I speak, or maybe even a week Sunday, I will be attending Chapter 51 in Birmingham, so I'll be able to knock out a good review straight away after the event. So I'm going to catch up over the next week or so. So be on the lookout for the different audios. But yeah, back to day one. This is a very good show. If you're the type of person who enjoys good wrestling, but not necessarily sort of slim on wrestling angles, because there was certainly some stuff here which we'll get into. But majority of the evening was just a showcase of some of the best wrestling that you'll probably see on the independent circuit. And what impressed me more than anything was that no matter what sort of style of wrestling you like, there was a little bit of everything here for you. If you like the more strong style stuff, that was here. The high flying stuff, that was certainly here. If you like more storyline driven sort of stuff, that was indeed here. So a little bit of everything for everyone, and I came away feeling very satisfied with day one. I have got a few nitpicks and a few things that bothered me, but again, as I usually say, probably best if we start going through, and then I'll be able to give my more extended thoughts as I go through. So as I said, this was originally filmed on the 27th of May 2017, and it was at the Electric Ballroom in Camden, which is the home base, essentially, of Progress Wrestling. It's such a popular venue that it only holds about 750 people, and when the tickets go on sale, literally they go straight away. The tickets for, I think it's Chapter 53 at the end of July, went on sale today as I record this, and it went at midday, and at 3 minutes past midday, because I was in a meeting at work, and I wanted to buy some tickets because I want to experience the Electric Ballroom atmosphere. And I went on at 3 minutes past 12 and all the tickets are already gone. Literally, not just the front row or second row or anything like that. Every single ticket had been sold by three minutes past 12, which I think is a good indicator of how popular Progress Wrestling is and has become in the UK. So anyway, they're in the Electric Ballroom. We had the usual opening spiel with Jim Smallman, sort of welcoming everybody, having a laugh with everyone, getting everyone involved into it, trying to get the crowd excited for the evening, and the usual stuff. And I have recently been listening to a podcast that Glenn Joseph was on. And Glenn Joseph, if you don't know, is one of the owners of Progress Wrestling. And one of the things he did say was, without Jim Smallman, Progress is not the same. And I'd completely agree with that, because you can put pretty much anyone in that position Jim Smallman does in terms of warming up the crowd and things like that, but I don't think anyone would do it as well as Jim does. Obviously he's got a vested interest being the owner of the company, but at the same time he genuinely comes across as someone who loves the fans, someone who appreciates every single moment that he has. You know, no matter how hard he's worked, he still knows that it's the fans who have made the company what it is, and it generally comes across. And I do think that statement that Progress would be a much lesser place without Jim Smallman is very valid. I know the criticisms, and I've heard it from people who I respect. You know, people like Darren Guttridge, who used to do the audios with me, used to say that, you know, you'd switch off for the first 5-10 minutes of the show, because it was mostly just banter with the crowd. And I always maintain that the fact that that is what you need for an independent show, because although we are watching it at home, you know, this is a live event for the people in the building, and this is a great way of generating the atmosphere. One thing I did want to mention about this, and this actually brought a tear to my eye, if I'm being quite honest. I'm not a particularly emotional guy, but recently, for some reason, a lot of things in wrestling has really sort of got me in my heart, you know. Jim Smallman was talking about three fans who are dedicated Progress Wrestling fans, and they reached out to him to basically tell him that they were involved in Manchester bombings. They'd been hurt as a consequence of some idiot who went into the ticket office and blew himself up. But he basically asked the crowd to just give a quick round of applause and all that. But the crowd responded by chanting, by standing up, by giving a massive ovation, you know, and it just made me realize how much, you know, no matter what's happening in the world, if you go to an event, and, you know, there might be that sort of feeling that something might happen, but at the same time, we can't be scared of these people. We are united together. And this moment was especially just very poignant and very, very, just shows what a great bunch of wrestling fans can be. No matter what reputation we get sometimes, this was just a great moment. And it started off the evening with, although obviously it's a sad subject, it started it off by saying, right, we don't give a shit what's happening in the world. We're going to be here and we're going to enjoy ourselves. We're here to watch wrestling and we're going to enjoy ourselves. Again, it's exactly like the last podcast I did. I need to point out, and I've already sworn, but I need to point out that this audio is going to be more of an adult theme, because Progress is a company that promotes to adults and has adult content. The language is not exactly going to be suitable for the youngsters, or it's not especially not suitable for work. So if you are in a situation where you think that it might be inappropriate to be listening to a Welshman swearing, then I would recommend that you put some headphones in or listen again later on, because I won't be holding back with my language, and especially when I'm recapping what's been going on. So I apologize again for swearing before giving that that warning, but I hope you understand. So after the opening, as I said, with the banter with the crowd and that wonderful moment with the spontaneous moment with the crowd on their feet applauding and giving a big fuck you to the terrorists, the first match of the night, which was Nathan Cruz against Jeff Cobb, and I think I should mention that there was 8 matches on this particular evening, and they were all super strong style 16 matches. The first round to qualify for the quarterfinals. So there's no other matches apart from the actual tournament matches on this evening. And the first, as I said, the first match was Nathan Cruz versus Jeff Cobb. I think the best thing I can say about this match was that it was a good opener in terms of it wasn't boring, it wasn't dull, but it didn't particularly excite either. It was kind of average. I haven't had a lot of exposure to Jeff Cobb. I know he's had a run in Lucha Underground. He might still be there, and I know he does quite a bit on the American indie scene. So this is really the first time that I'd have had a chance to watch him and analyze exactly what he does. And yeah, I was kind of impressed. He comes across as a athletic big man, but at the same time, it might be because of the opponent, because Nathan Cruz is quite, what's the word I'm looking for? Precise with what he does. He's not necessarily someone who excites you, but he does what he does well. I'm not sure if that was the reason I wasn't as high on Jeff Cobb as I've sort of seen other people be. But he certainly had a lot of great sort of big man moves. There was one point where he caught Nathan Cruz, who was attempting a crossbody, and then transitioned that into a one-handed suplex, and that was a wow moment. But yeah, this was Jeff Cobb basically going over Nathan Cruz to advance to the quarterfinals. And as I said, it was good for an opener. I can't say that I was, as I said, amazingly impressed with either guy. But I didn't come away feeling that it was a dampener of an opener. There was, as I said, there was a few good moves. Another one that Jeff Cobb hit was something that I'd never seen before, was a standing shooting star headbutt, which was quite interesting. And he eventually put Nathan Cruz away with the tour of the islands for the win, and which is essentially a spinning power slam. The commentators talked a lot this evening about people advancing to the quarterfinals, and I think this is the best time to explain one of my biggest gripes for the evening. There was no fucking graphics. Absolutely no graphics to show you what the brackets were. So you're just sort of just thinking, right, okay, so he's into the quarterfinals, but who is he facing, or who is he potentially going to be facing? And this is something that I've always said about Progress Wrestling, is the fact that they do such a good job in turning around these events to put on their on-demand service. And they, from a production point of view, from an independent company, they do such a great job with it, and they've been getting better with the sound and the visual quality. But with tournaments, part of the fun is looking at the brackets and seeing who's potentially going to be facing who, the connotations of what can happen next, and so on and so forth. But there was none of that, and the commentators were not very consistent with basically saying, okay, well, Jeff Cobb advances to the quarterfinals where he could face so and so and so and so. As I record this now, as I said, I haven't watched all of day two, so I have no idea of the whole quarterfinal setup at the moment. And after watching a 3-hour show that was essentially just a tournament show, I should have more of an understanding of A, who has won, B, who is facing who in the next round, and have a general idea of where I think this is going to go, or where, from a sports-like presentation, I think that it could go. And it just feels like I'm missing something from the tournament experience. And it is something that they've always done with the women's tournament. They did exactly the same thing with the Atlas tournament, exactly the same thing. So it is an area that I think Progress can really improve on. And it is a shame, because I was really hoping that they would have the brackets for the Super Strong Style 16 tournament, because it is sort of a highlight of their calendar, but alas. So the second match of the night, and my personal favourite of the evening, which was Mark Haskins versus Flash Morgan Webster. The commentators went out of their way before the match even started to point out that these guys were really good friends, and I've heard a podcast with both of them on, and that is certainly true. And it did play in well to the actual story of the match, which essentially, I'll take you back a couple of months. When, back in December, Mark Haskins came back from a couple of months out from an injury, and also Flash Morgan Webster came back from an injury that I think took him out of action for about 14 months, I think it was. It was the injury that he sustained against Zack Sabre Jr. It wouldn't have been 14 months. It was about 8 or 9 months for the qualifying match for the WWE Cruiserweight Classic. And they both came back together, and it was a great moment. And there's some good behind-the-scenes footage on Flash Morgan Webster's documentary. And it's quite clear how close they are. But the story of the match was essentially Mark Haskins targeting the ankle that was injured of Flash Morgan Webster, and basically at every opportunity targeting the left ankle. And it was a great little story, because, you know, Mark Haskins comes across as a generally likable man. He comes across as an everyman, which is why people are so behind him. But at the same time, he also comes across as someone who is desperate to regain the championship that he never lost. He had to vacate the title because of injury, legitimate injury. So he comes across as someone who is just determined and a man possessed, and not even one of his best friends was going to stop him from getting an opportunity down the line by winning the Super Strong Style 16. And that's why he targeted the ankle. He wanted to gain an advantage. Some might say an unfair advantage, but at the same time, he went straight for it, and it was great. And the facials by Flash Morgan Webster, just the look of betrayal on his face, you know, they told such a great story while at the same time working at a very quick pace and a very exciting pace. It was such a good little match, you know, with a lot of stories being told. The other thing that I want to praise Flash Morgan Webster for is the fact that he was selling the ankle the whole time. Even something as simple as running the ropes, which, you know, a lot of the time, if you watch a match and they're targeting a specific area, after a little while, it is forgotten about, and people run the ropes as if nothing had happened. But Flash Morgan Webster was purposely selling the ankle, and it was just great. And there was just so many quick transitions and killer blows and close two counts. Oh, it was one of those matches which I just sort of sat back and just went, yeah, this is why I'm a pro wrestling fan. But eventually, Haskins rolled Flash Morgan Webster into a sharpshooter, and then not only had the sharpshooter apply, but then put pressure on the ankle that we've been talking about, and immediately Flash Morgan Webster tapped. After the match, though, Flash Morgan Webster got in the face of Mark Haskins and was basically asking what the fuck was that about. And you could see the anger in his face. But eventually, Mark Haskins, I think, essentially said business is business. And after a bit of a argy-bargy, they eventually hugged, and all was well in the world. So yeah, so Mark Haskins advances to the quarterfinals. I'm not sure how far he's going to go. I think there might be more stories coming out of this with Mark Haskins, because he's essentially had his opportunities against Pete Dunne, and you know, a lot of them have been in triple threats and things like that. But although Mark Haskins is probably one of my favourite indie wrestlers at the moment, I think they're going to probably transition him into something else. I've got my own suspicion about who's going to win the Super Strong Style 16, which we'll get to later on. But yeah, certainly Mark Haskins, I think, will go deep into the tournament, but I don't think he's actually going to win it. The next match of the night, it was Jimmy Havoc against Travis Banks. Now, I mentioned earlier on that there was essentially a match for everyone on this card, and Jimmy Havoc is synonymous with garbage wrestling, if that's what you want to call it, a sort of more hardcore type of match. And although this match wasn't anywhere close to what you describe as a normal Jimmy Havoc hardcore match, they did incorporate a lot of hardcore elements into this, and Travis Banks came out of this looking absolutely great. He looked like an absolute beast. There was one moment when Jimmy Havoc was throwing chairs at him, literally just throwing chairs, and Travis Banks would just use his arm and just knock them out of the way, you know, Terminator style. It was a great visual, and it earned a lot of respect, I think, in the eyes of the fans, of Travis Banks not only being such a great worker in the ring, but also being a tough bastard, you know, really, really sort of emphasizing that point. Just to go back, when Jimmy Havoc came out, he came out to some random music. It wasn't as random as some of the other guys, but he usually comes out to a song by AFI, which is very synonymous with him in Progress Wrestling. But for some reason, he came out to some generic music, as I said, and a lot of the guys tonight were coming out to some really generic music. They show a graphic on Progress Wrestling that basically says what the entrance music is. And a lot of them were coming up with a company called Hot Tag Media. And a lot of people that you'd expect to come out to the usual music were coming out to this generic sounding music. You know, people like Jack Sexsmith, whose theme song, I Touch Myself, which is a popular pop song, he didn't come out to that. You know, and Travis Banks came out to some random generic music, and so on and so forth. And it's such a shame, you know. I got my suspicions that it might have something to do with copyright, it might have something to do with the exposure that Progress is or is about to have worldwide, and perhaps that might have something to do with it. That's no inside knowledge, that's just me purely speculating. But it just seemed very odd that all of a sudden all the music has been taken away, stripped back, and you've got this generic music that could have come out from the early 90s of WWF, you know? It's that sort of generic rock sort of riffs and so on and so forth. And it's a real shame, because part of the appeal for Progress for me originally was the fact that I love rock music and I love punk rock music, and I like that dirty and gritty sort of music, you know, and it was synonymous with Progress Wrestling. And now they're sort of coming out to this stuff that sounds like a 12-year-old has made in the garden, in the garage. you know, that sort of feeling to it. And it is such a shame. Hopefully that will improve in the future. But, you know, Jimmy Havoc coming out to some random music instead of his usual AFI music was just, it was a shame because it usually gets the crowd involved. The good thing is, you know, and later on with Pastor William Eva, you know, he came out with some generic music instead of Depeche Mode's Personal Jesus. But the crowd started singing Personal Jesus. So, you know, they'll never get rid of that. And I don't know if that's going to cause any copyright issues. I very much doubt it. But, yeah, it is such a shame. And as I said, it takes a part of the experience of Progress Wrestling away. And you know, hopefully that'll be rectified. But, yeah, back to the Jimmy Havoc-Travis Banks match. As I said, it wasn't exactly a hardcore match per se. There were some good spots with the chairs. Jimmy Havoc taking a chair full on in the head, not my cup of tea. I've made my position clear on that a lot. And in 2017, if you're doing that, you're a fucking idiot. And I'm just going to come out and say it. You know, I've heard Jimmy Havoc on podcasts. I've seen him here and there. And he comes across as a really nice guy, but I don't understand the intelligence, or I don't understand the mindset of someone who, in this day and age, still takes unprotected chair shots to the head. It just doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever. But, you know, at the end of the day, who am I? But yeah, as I said, there was a lot of this felt like a big match. You know, this felt like a match with a lot of magnitude to it, and there was a lot of back and forth. Travis Banks using his wrestling ability, as I've always said about Jimmy Havoc, he's a fantastic wrestler. It's just that he just doesn't tend to fall back on it. He falls back on his garbage wrestling sort of background, and you know, it is a shame. But there was a few moments, if I want to be really nitpicky, there was a few moments where you could quite clearly see Jimmy Havoc calling the next spot, you know, and talking to Travis Banks in the ring. You know, that was a bit of a shame. But I absolutely loved the ending of the match. Essentially, Jimmy Havoc was setting up for the Acid Rainmaker, which is essentially a clothesline. You hold on to the opponent, spin him around towards you, and then hit a clothesline. But he attempted that, held onto Travis Banks' arm, who blocked the clothesline, and then knocked Jimmy Havoc so he's bending over, and then just took his foot and just started kicking the shit out of his head. I mean, literally just beating the hell out of it. And it was such a great visual. And then as soon as Jimmy Havoc was stunned from that, Travis Banks hit the Kiwi Crusher for the win. Something that Jimmy Havoc is not synonymous with doing. You know, a lot of wrestlers have a tendency of showing respect to their opponent after the match. Jimmy Havoc has hardly ever done that. But although he flipped Travis Banks the bird, he then shook his hand as a mark of respect. And then the Progress fans give Travis Banks a standing ovation. It was a lovely visual after a pretty good match. You know, I don't like giving star ratings, but I'd probably give this a 3 stars. And it was probably my second or third favorite match of the night. And it was definitely a good match to watch if you get the opportunity. I do worry about Travis Banks slightly, because he is on a limited visa in the UK. And I really hope they can sort something out where he can stay longer than TK Cooper and Dahlia Black, who have to go back to New Zealand, because I really enjoy watching his stuff in Progress. And I do think that he is going to go quite far in the tournament. So fingers crossed for day 2 and day 3 that we get some more Travis Banks goodness. So the fourth match of the night was Zack Sabre Jr. versus David Starr. Now, again, Zack Sabre Jr. came out to, he usually comes out to Kasabian's Hail Caesar. He didn't here, came out to some generic random music. David Starr, again, he's someone who I've seen more than I think that I've seen of him, but at the same time, I've never really had the opportunity, again, like Jeff Cobb, to sit down and really analyse what he does. And the first thing that came over to me was the fact that he was incredibly charismatic. And Jim Smallman was playing into this with such a great intro, and there was some funny lines like, he's your favorite wrestler's favorite wrestler, and he was the circumcised savior and things like that. And it was just really, really good at Twitter, just sort of really nice little comments about David Starr and the way that he was reacting was just very charismatic and very very animated. Zack Sabre Jr. came out with a t-shirt with Jeremy Corbyn on it. A lot of you listening to this will have no idea who Jeremy Corbyn is, but essentially he's the leader of the opposition against the dragon that is Theresa May, and hopefully at some point, not too far in the future, he may be able to slay that dragon. But that's enough politics that I'm going to be talking about. But the crowd were chanting Corbyn, 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 Jeremy fucking Corbyn, which I don't think has ever been used in any context in the world, like, ever. If you're American, have a look at Google, type in Jeremy Corbyn, and imagine, a passionate wrestling crowd singing a chant like that about the guy, that the picture that you're looking at right now. It's an interesting sort of dynamic, I'll put it that way. This was a pretty good match. Again, this Zack Sabre Jr., his style of wrestling is not my cup of tea. I recognize how good he is, and I recognize how people invest into him and really enjoy what he does, but he's not my style of wrestler. That's nothing against him whatsoever. You know, I just don't like the more MMA / chain wrestling type of stuff. That's just my own personal stuff, my own personal point of view. But I do appreciate how good he is. And against David Starr, they both put on a really good performance here. At one point, Starr did trying to work a heel. He shouted at the crowd, "It's time for some high flying," and then he just thrust his crotch into Zack Sabre Jr.'s face. But the crowd just went buying it. You could just tell they absolutely love David Starr. But that move itself actually fired up Zack Sabre Jr. And it was the first time it actually felt that, me watching Zack Sabre Jr. while watching the British indie scene that I've seen him in. It's the first time I ever felt like he was fired up, and he felt like he was in a real fight and he wanted to kick the shit out of his opponent, which usually he just feels like he's just trying to stretch them and out wrestle them, but this looked like he was on an absolute fight. And then he started to focus on the fingers and the wrist of David Starr, and he did this for quite a substantial amount of time. The crowd started chanting at this point, "Fuck the Tory party." Which is fine. You know, I did get a laugh out of a lot of the stuff the crowd were chanting, but this is the one time that I've actually watched anything filmed in the UK with a UK fan base, and just felt that the crowd just sort of took away from the match itself. They weren't really focusing on the match. They were just more inclined to try and think of some funny chants based around politics. And not being overly critical, because, you know, it's just one of those things, but I did feel that this was the one time with the crowd trying to get themselves over instead of actually focusing on the match, only because they were more focused on two people who have probably never even seen a wrestling match, in Theresa May and Jeremy Corbyn, than actually watching the match and appreciating what was going on in front of them. To cut a long story short, Zack Sabre Jr. won this match via submission. It was a combination of an armbar and then kicks to the head, and David Starr tapped. After the match, David Starr got a great reaction and the usual "please come back" chant, as you'd usually expect from an overseas star who put in a good performance like he did in this match. Zack Sabre Jr. is obviously the if you want to go from a bookie's point of view, would probably be the bookie's favourite because of his pedigree and his experience, etc. I don't think that he'll go much further than the quarterfinals, to be honest, only because he's not a regular in Progress, and I think they're going to be trying to push a lot more of the Progress regulars over the more established stars. So this brought the intermission, and Jim Smolin came back out and said that there'll be four more matches in the second half to round up the Super Strong Style 16 day one. And the first match of those four was Zach Gibson against Jack Sexsmith. Usual Zach Gibson intro, in terms of the heat that he got, the boos, and the usual soon to be recognised as Liverpool's number one, etc., etc. The crowd just eat it up. They literally hate this guy. But as I've always said, and as Darren said before me, they love to hate him. You know, it's not a go away heat. It's literally, we want to boo the shit out of you, and that's exactly what we're gonna do, and that's exactly what they did here. Again, though, Zach Gibson, instead of coming out to Metallica's "Turn the Page" or the cover of "You'll Never Walk Alone," just came out to some random generic music. And I think this was another Hot Tag Media special. And again, Jack Sexsmith came out to some really poor music, really hated it, really didn't like that at all. Especially for someone like Jack Sexsmith, who's, I touched myself, gets the crowd really invested into the match. They get really excited, they get really happy because they get to get in their feet and sing and dance before the match has even started, as well as, you know, loving the character that is Jack Sexsmith. In a really, really sort of, incredibly choreographed, I imagine, but it was a great visual. Everyone in the front row, all the way around the ring, were holding rainbow flags, which is obviously the symbol for the LGBT community. And it was just a nice visual, you know. And the story that they're obviously telling with Jack Sexsmith, if you haven't been following along with the audio coverage, is simply that he is someone who has feels that he represents the homosexual community, the lesbian community, the pansexual community, etc., etc. He feels that he is someone who, because he's come out and he's confident, and because he is someone who people can look up to, you know, someone who if they are of that sexual persuasion, can come to a wrestling event and not feel that they're out of place, and so on and so forth. It's a really, really great motivational sort of inspirational story, and the crowd are just eating it up. And it's just one of those wonderful storylines that you get, magic in a bottle, sort of, especially with the way the world is now in terms of the way that opinions and sort of behaviours are starting to change towards people of different sexualities. You know, he represents someone who people can get behind, that they can take inspiration from. And he certainly, as we said when we first watched Jack Sexsmith, was that he's a great character, but there were some elements of his character that were very stereotypical. They were very how people would perceive people of different sexualities to be, in a negative connotation. And we said at the time, we really hope he gets away from that. And that's exactly what he did. He did a wonderful interview in January where he was basically saying, listen, I was really just happy to be a wrestler. I was really happy to be here. But now I'm being serious. Now I know I represent people of different sexualities, and I need to be more serious. And I need to sort of cut out some of the silly stuff that I do. And ever since then, his character has been fantastic. He's a true underdog, someone who, you know, gets beaten down, but always comes back, always keeps fighting, And the crowd are just eating it up. You know, as I said, magic in a bottle, it's fantastic to watch. And this was Jack Sexsmith beating Zach Gibson. I didn't get a time on it, unfortunately, but essentially, Zach Gibson went for a helter-skelter mid-ring. But Jack got Gibson in a small package, and the crowd just went insane. I mean, literally, I haven't seen a reaction to that to a wrestling match in a very, very long time. It was just such a great outpouring of emotion, a great storyline sort of arc in this overall arc that they're doing with Jack Sexsmith. You know, Zach Gibson was one of the people who, when Jack Sexsmith was trying to prove that not only did he belong to be a wrestler, but he's also a good wrestler, someone to be afraid of. You know, Zach Gibson was someone who actually beat him. They played on the spot from a previous match where I believe Zach Gibson hit a Ticket to Ride on Jack Sexsmith on the outside in the previous match, and eventually Jack Sexsmith got counted out and had to be carried to the back. And they did exactly the same spot here. But this time, Jack Sexsmith crawled into the ring. And although he took a beating for another good couple of minutes, he eventually came back with some moves of his own. and so on and so forth. And it was just these little stories within the overall story, which was just so great. And that's where the crowd were just getting so invested into it. You know, within 10 seconds of the match starting, Gibson hit a ticket to ride on Jack Sexsmith, already putting him on the back foot. So the underdog was already even more of an underdog. And just the whole match was just beautifully constructed. The emotional outpouring afterwards was great and genuine. You know, it wasn't just, you know, oh, this is just a wrestling angle. To a lot of people in that crowd, you know, I imagine there was a lot of people with different sexualities was watching this and going, he's one of us. If he can do it, I can do whatever people have told me I can't do. And it's just great. It really is just great. But moving on to something that isn't so great. This match, to me, the next match coming up, was perhaps a little bit of... I'm a bit conflicted on this. I'll talk through it and see if I can sort of balance it up in my head. But it was Tyler Bate against Pastor William Eva. Tyler Bate came out, obviously, without the WWE Championship, which he lost to Pete Dunne, which wasn't really addressed. It's going to be interesting on one of the further chapters when they address it, you know, just to see, you know, because obviously Pete Dunne and Tyler Bate in Progress World are part of the British Strong Style. They're part of the stablemates, but obviously in NXT and WWE, they are on opposition sides, you know, the heel face dynamic. So it's going to be interesting to see how they cover that in Progress. I'm looking forward to that. But here, Tyler Bate came out. And then Pastor William Eva came out, and again to another hot tag media. I've just made this on my computer song. As I said, the crowd sang Personal Jesus. Tyler Bate was incredibly cocky at the start, and I liked that. And I will say straight away that Tyler Bate won after only about 3 or 4 minutes, very, very easily. And the reason I liked that was because when you get a tournament in a quote-unquote fake tournament situation, you tend to get a lot of even matches. Now, in the real world, in the real sporting context, you wouldn't get that. In a tournament, you'd get some teams who just absolutely batter the opposition. And you sort of think, well, why was the other team in it in the first place? And you know, this gave the tournament to me a sense of credibility in terms of you're not just going to get all these evenly matched pairings, and then magically that they all have these really competitive matches, and then no one sort of looks incredibly strong coming out of it. And Tyler Bates winning within 3-4 minutes was just a great way of giving that credibility to the actual match. What I didn't like, and this harks back to the problem I feel with the Pastor William Eva persona, was Tyler Bates literally mocked the Jesus crucifixion. He stood mid-ring, held his arms out, and then put his head to one side like you imagine Jesus did on the cross, and basically made the symbol of I'm dead by sticking his tongue out. And I will counter that and say that they did have Pastor William Eva mock Tyler Bate for the whole Mustache Mountain thing where he twiddles his mustache, which is a funny moment, I will admit that. But the crucifixion, the symbolism of it, I do still have a lot of issues with that. I'm not particularly religious myself. I've got my own beliefs, but I don't go to church. I don't know what I believe half the time, to be quite honest with you. And it doesn't particularly offend me, but what bothers me is, as we've seen, religion is something that people take incredibly seriously. And when you've got someone mocking the crucifixion in a storyline context, in a wrestling event, I can imagine a lot of people watching that and going, is this what Progress is all about? Well, fuck them. Well, they wouldn't say that because they're religious, but you know what I'm saying. They would basically go, this is not for me. This is not something that I want to watch. This is not something I want my kids to watch. This is not something that I want to be promoted. And you know, they'll turn off from it. And I might be sounding like I'm being overdramatic, but you'd be very surprised how, if you're not of that persuasion in terms of religion, how important religion is to a lot of people. And I think mocking the crucifixion and harking back to the Pastor William Eva Sebastian feud from a couple of months ago, the mock crucifixion on the ropes of Pastor William Eva, I just don't think, although I'm happy that they use adult themes in Progress, I think religion and that symbolism should be left, you know, away from it. And but the problem is, when you've got someone like the Pastor William Eever, who, you know, is a babyface, he's popular, and you want to get heel heat on him, it is a cheap way of getting a lot of heel heat. But as I said, I'm just concerned more about the people who are watching it, who will be incredibly offended by that. And yeah, so I made my peace about that. But as I said, Tyler Bate mostly dominated this match. And then the Pastor had a brief comeback, but Tyler Bate hit a Tyler Driver 97 and got the win within 3 to 4 minutes. So moving on to the next match, it was Mark Andrews against Flamita, who was previously Octagon Jr. and is also Nightclaw in Lucha Underground. I got a note here saying, thank fuck Andrew still uses his band's music, because I was getting so tired of the generic, random crap music. And then Mark Andrews came out to A House That's Not Quite Home by his band Junior, which I absolutely love. I still maintain it's one of the best songs out there at the moment. But yeah, that's just my own personal opinion. I know what Darren would be saying if he was here. He'd be mocking the song. But I don't care, because he's not listening. So fuck you, Darren. I'm actually seeing him in a couple of weeks' time, so I will say that to his face. I'm not being a sneaky behind his back. But yeah, the crowd were on their feet, and I don't know if they felt the same way or whether they just loved Mark Andrews, but yeah, they were on their feet singing along to the song. So Flamita came out and also got another great reaction. Jim Smallman joked that he was looking forward to introducing Flamita in Spanish, but then apologised if his pronunciation was bad, which sounded pretty good to me. This was actually quite a surprising ending, with Flamita going over Mark Andrews to advance in the tournament. I say a surprise only because Mark Andrews has been given a massive push in Progress. And also, obviously, he's got the whole WWE Championship run behind him, you know, the exposure he's got from that. But again, I like the fact that they were perfectly comfortable with someone going over Mark Andrews and keeping intact the credibility of the tournament sort of structure. And yeah, it was a good match. I was hoping for a lot more. It felt to me that there was some, not necessarily miscommunication, because there was nothing that you could point to and go, ooh, that didn't look good. But everything just seemed to take a bit longer to set up. There was a few moments where one or the other would be standing up in an unnatural way, just being still, standing and being still, waiting for the next spot. And it just didn't seem to flow and be as fluid as I would imagine a match between these two. But again, you know, I don't know how often, if at all, they've worked with each other. And I don't know if there's any kind of language barrier or anything like that. You know, let's be fair, Welsh people like myself and Mark Andrews are not exactly easy to understand. But in all seriousness, you know, I don't know how much English Flamita speaks, and whether it was easy enough to communicate in the ring. So it was a little bit disappointing from that point of view. You know, I'll be honest, my expectations were quite lofty. So if they'd been a little bit lower, then I think I would have been more impressed with this match. But it wasn't, and again, not necessarily disappointment, just not quite reaching what I would say would be a reasonable expectation for two world-class workers. And just to get the admin out of the way, Flamita actually won with a flam fly. This is one of those times when the commentators actually bothered to tell us who was facing each other in the quarterfinals. And in this case, they told us that Flamita would be taking on Travis Banks in the quarterfinals, which is a match that is next on my viewing list, and I'll be honest, I can't really wait for this. It's gonna be good. I think I'll watch that as soon as I'm done with this audio. So yeah, the final match of the night, and I was quite surprised by this. But the way that it worked out, I wasn't. And going into it, there was about 7 minutes of the broadcast left, and I was thinking, that's a little bit odd. You know, it was Matt Riddle against Trent Seven. And with Matt Riddle being the ultimate sort of global star that he is at the moment on the indie scenes, and Trent Seven getting a lot of exposure on WWE television, I thought 7 minutes This is before even the intro, so I was thinking this is very odd that they would only have 7 minutes for the intros, for the introductions, and then for the actual match itself. But the way it worked out was that Trent Seven came out, and I do need to recap here as well. On chapter 48, there was a beatdown of Matt Riddle by Trent Seven and the other members of the British Strong Style. So there was already that sort of brewing under the surface before this match even started. So first of all, Trent Seven came out and he did some really great heel work. I mean, he was really trying to piss off the crowd. He was getting in their faces. Anyone who's flipping him the bird, he would sort of try and bend their fingers, obviously not to hurt them, but just try to push everyone out of the way, really trying to piss them off. Matt Riddle came out to his usual music with the crowd singing bro, 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 bro. You could see in the background when Matt Riddle was after Matt Riddle had been introduced, that Trent Seven was talking to Jim Smallman, and you could see Jim Smallman just basically saying, "No, I'm not saying it. No, nope, not going to say it. Not going to say it. Not going to say it." So Trent Seven grabbed the microphone, and unfortunately, I didn't write down verbatim exactly what he said, but essentially what he said, he kept calling Matt Riddle Matthew, which I thought was really disparaging and quite brilliant at the same time. He heeled on the crowd, basically saying that when Matt Riddle and Trent Seven faced each other in Orlando in front of real fans, not the plastic fans who only come to London, which I thought was a nice line for the audience. He talked about the massive amount of money he had on his long-term contract with WWE. He talked about Matt Riddle, who'd recently been using retired Brock Lesnar T-shirts. He said he discussed it as colleagues with Brock, and Brock was not happy, especially from someone who couldn't cut it in the UFC or NXT. And as he was saying that, he was indicating pot use, which was quite amusing as well. He finished, Matthew is just content with coming back to these shitty little venues and performing in front of these shitty little fans. He then concluded his spiel by saying to Matt Riddle, and this is verbatim, "Get back in your corner, you pussy." At this point, the bell rang, and the camera work was fantastic here. They were pointing towards Trent Seven. The bell rang, and all you saw coming from the right was Matt Riddle charging at Trent Seven, who hit Trent Seven with the knee straight in the mouth, knocked him out, three counts. That's your lot. And that was it. It was brilliant. Jim Smallman then announced Matt Riddle as knocking Trent Seven the fuck out. Just all around brilliant work here. Essentially, this is not something that I would like to see on a regular occurrence. It does play into what I was saying about the tournament structure in terms of not necessarily always having the need to have these long matches, these big competitive matches. This was just something that was just outstanding in terms of shock value. You know, Matt Riddle knocking out someone from WWE in that amount of time. But it was also the heel work beforehand, which really set this up, which really got you pissed off, wanting to see this guy get the shit kicked out of him. And just to see that smug guy just getting a knee in the face and being knocked out. And in all fairness to him, you know, I've been critical of him. Darren was critical of him in the past of not selling as a heel. This was fantastic. This he literally on the mat, knocked out in the same position, not moving an inch, barely breathing by the looks of it, for a good 4 or 5 minutes. Literally just wasn't moving. It was great. And he really put over the devastation of the knee from Matt Riddle. And as I said, it was a really satisfying moment for the crowd who had just been healed on by Trent Seven, and it was a really great reaction because of that. The crowd then started chanting, "Who the fuck is Trent Seven?" and then chat shit, get banged. As the referees were carrying Trent Seven to the back, Pete Dunne and Tyler Bate came out and helped their stablemates to the back, and that's how the show ended. So, yeah, as I said, overall, the quality of the matches was good to great on many occasions. There were some things that I said going through that I was not particularly enamoured with, and stuff that I wasn't particularly pleased with. But overall, I came away from day one just really, really excited to watch the second and third day, which is exactly what you want. I don't know what the exact card for day two or day three. I'm a little bit nervous about even looking at old websites that might contain spoilers, because I want to watch this as if without any knowledge whatsoever of what's happened. So unfortunately, I can't run down the card. I know the women have their final for the first ever Women's Progress Championship, which I've heard good things about, so I'm looking forward to watching that. Overall, my overall pick is going to be Jack Sexsmith. I think the story that they're telling, the potential of what it means in the grander scheme of things outside a wrestling tournament, is something that is a once in a lifetime opportunity, which I think they'll capitalize on. I think it's going to be Jack Sexsmith against Travis Banks, which again is someone else who's beat him quite recently. But it'd be a good redemption story, I think. So that's going to be my overall pick as I leave day one, going into day two. So I highly recommend day one. If you're someone who enjoys world-class wrestling and stories being told within the context of the ring and not necessarily anything happening outside the ring or on the microphone, this is certainly the show for you. And if you've seen the show and you agree or disagree with me, I'm more than happy to have a chat about it. You can find me on Twitter at Hayden Gleeds, or I haven't given my email out in a while. It's hayden.gleed@gmail.com. Feel free to get in touch and we can have a little discussion about it. So I'll be back in the next couple of days with day two's audio, and then obviously a couple of days after that for day three. And then next week, then I'm looking to get chapter 50 in the can as well, ready for when I go to chapter 51 at Birmingham. So there's a lot of Progress Wrestling coming your way soon. So if I don't speak to you on Twitter or via email, I'll speak to you again soon.